So for those of you that weren't here last year, you're coming in the middle of a movie. That's always a tough thing to do, but I was doing a two-part sermon on remembering the Sabbath day to keep it holy. And we'll just go through a little recap of what we went through last Sabbath to catch you up, to remind you. And for those of you that weren't here, we will get the sermons up online. We had a problem with our FTP server that we weren't able to upload any sermons for a while, but that has been resolved now, so we'll get those up and running. So today is part two on how to keep the Sabbath holy. We observe the Sabbath from sunset Friday to sunset Saturday. We all know that. Those that keep the Sabbath do that. We teach that the early church kept both the Sabbath and the holy days. We believe that the Sabbath and the holy days are still in effect today. But as we talked last time, the Sabbath is a gift from God, not a series of rules and regulations. It's a gift, something that he has given to us, and he expects us to use it. As I said last time, if your boss gives you some days off, you're too stressed, Mr. Sandlins, I want you to take some days off. He doesn't mean to go back to work. He means get some rest, and that's a special gift that has been given to us. Unfortunately, within the community that keeps the Sabbath, there are a lot of different ideas about how the Sabbath should be kept. As we talked about in Exodus 20 in verse 8, it says, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. It not only says that we are to keep the Sabbath, but we are to keep it holy. So how do we do that today? Last week we talked about the basic command from God from Genesis chapter 2, where he created the Sabbath. And we went through four distinct words that were used there. We talked about the Hebrew for all of those and what they mean. The word for rest, shabbat. The word for work and what that meant, that he both blessed and sanctified the Sabbath. Two very different words that have very different meanings to them. We also talked last week about the difference between how Christ kept the Sabbath and the Pharisees kept the Sabbath. When the Pharisees kept the Sabbath, it became a list of do's and don'ts. That was what the Sabbath was to them. In fact, it's interesting to me when you read through the New Testament, it seems that 90% of the problems that the Pharisees had with Christ had to do with the Sabbath, something to do with the Sabbath. He just wasn't keeping it right. And he reminded them, although I don't think they got the point, I'm the one that created the Sabbath. I should be telling you how to keep it. You shouldn't be telling me how to keep it. And so from that, we can start to draw some basic principles. Remember, as I said last time, the Bible is long on principles but short on details. And I think that was done for a reason. I think we have a very intelligent creator who knew that as society and technology changed, that we wouldn't need necessarily a list of do's and don'ts, but principles that we could then use to apply to his creation in whatever age we may live. You know, he may have said in his word, you cannot untie your camel on the Sabbath. Well, yes, that for them at that time, that's appropriate. How many of you have a camel? Yeah, see, so we don't need a list of do's and don'ts. We need principles upon which we can decide during the 21st century how we can keep the Sabbath correctly. So how can we apply these biblical principles to our time in 2018? Several scriptures will guide us into proper Sabbath observance. So what I'd like to do today is explore five principles from the Bible that talk about the Sabbath, and then extrapolate on how we can keep the Sabbath holy in 2018. Point number one, we talked about this some last week, and I won't spend a lot of time on it, but there were just a couple of points that I didn't cover last time that I want to. Point number one, and you can turn back to Exodus chapter 20 to get this, we know that the Sabbath was created for us to abstain from work, that we were to cease work, we were to put our tools down. We were to rest on that day. We are to keep the Sabbath by abstaining from work. I want to reread this. I read it last time, but I want to make a couple of extra points here. Exodus chapter 20, and I want to start in verse 8. It says, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. Why would he tell the Israelites to remember? And the answer is, they had forgotten. They were in slavery for hundreds of years. The Sabbath was in effect before then. But afterwards, he had to remind them. And he not only had to remind them of it, he had to remind them to remember it, if I can be redundant. It's something that we have to remember. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Eternal your God. In it you will do no work. So we're told here that 6 days you should work, and one day you shouldn't, and that one day we shouldn't is the seventh day of the week. The word work here is the same one we talked about last week in Genesis chapter 2. It's what God stopped doing when he kept the Sabbath. And he set that example for us. We've said this before, and it's obvious. God did not rest because he needed it. And sometimes, I think, as humans, we don't think we need it either. We think we're pretty unconquerable. But that's just not true. And I think you'll see as we go through this, the one who created and designed us knew that we needed one day in seven to rest. Remember, while in Egypt, the Israelites were forced to work 7 days a week. And that generation that left Egypt had never known anything about the Sabbath. So when they came out of slavery, he had to reteach them how to keep it. Notice what he says if you continue on in verse 10. It says, not only shall you keep the Sabbath, but your son, your daughter shall keep the Sabbath, your male servant, your female servant, even your cattle, and the stranger that's within your gates. For in 6 days the Eternal made the heavens and the earth, the sea and all that in them is, and he rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Eternal blessed the Sabbath day and hallowed it. Even the cattle get a day off. Isn't that interesting that God would care for cattle? You know, I won't turn there for the sake of time, but if you ever want to read in Leviticus 25, he even discusses that our land needs to rest 1 year out of seven. So that the land can recoup. You get the idea that when God made this creation, he knew that it needed to rest. The land needs rest. Animals need rest. And the pinnacle of his creative process, humans, certainly need rest. So using this principle of putting down work for that day, let's talk about some modern day scenarios. The ancient Israelites were basically nomadic people. When they settled down, even in the land of Canaan, they still were basically farmers or ranchers. But not many of us are farmers or ranchers today. In fact, a lot of us sit behind a desk. How many of you sit behind a desk for the majority of your work? What's tiring about that? Right? Why do you need to take the Sabbath off if all you do is sit behind a desk? Isn't this for farmers and ranchers? And I would stress to you, and use the word stress in its double meaning, sitting behind a desk all day long is stressful. Going through spreadsheets, worrying about finances. Is your company going to go under? Are you going to have a job next week? Those things cause stress. Rest just isn't physical rest. Rest is also mental rest, spiritual rest. You need a time to recharge your batteries. And that can be physical, that can be mental, that can be spiritual. Any job carries stress, and our body needs mental rest as well as physical rest. So we are to get away from our desk, get away from our regular routine, whatever it is that we do for our business, and put that day aside to do other things. And we'll talk about those other things as we get there. How about our children? This says here that your son or your daughter shouldn't work. So obviously that means, Dad, you don't go send your kids out on Saturday to mow the lawn because you can't, right? It goes more than that. When you think about kindergarten through 12th grade, what are our children's jobs? School. School is stress. Ask any student who's got a test to take. School is stressful. They need a day in seven to rest. So, kids, we don't make you do homework on the Sabbath. There's a reason for that, because you need a day off too. You need a day to rest. As cattle were used as tools by the farmers, God says here that even your cattle needs rest. What tools do you use today? Tools that you use today maybe aren't cattle, but maybe it's a lawnmower, and you rest from your work. So my lawnmower stays in the shed every Sabbath. I don't bring it out. I think, do you see where I'm going with this? We can apply principles based on the Word of God. We can turn to what he says in the Bible about putting our normal work week away and taking a day off to rest and apply it to modern scenarios. You know, last week we even read the scripture that talked about not bearing a burden on the Sabbath, meaning don't, your shop may be closed, the lights may not even be on, but you might be in there stocking the shelves for next week. No, you don't even do that. This is not about not making money. This is about actually taking a day off and resting. so we don't bear a burden on the Sabbath. I think the reason why God stressed this is because as humans, if we're not careful, the Sabbath can become a catch-up day for work that we didn't get to the rest of the week because we're all busy. This is a rhetorical question. I do not want to show of hands. How many of you go into the Sabbath thinking, oh, I've just got so much to do, and it's very hard to put that worry and to put that stress aside because there's so much going on in our busy lives. But yet God says through the creation of the Sabbath that the Sabbath isn't to be a catch-all for the work that you didn't get through the rest of the week. And I would even submit to you that if you go into the Sabbath stressing over the things that you didn't get done, you've got too many things going on in your life. In fact, the Sabbath can help us prioritize and minimalize some of the things that are in our lives that don't need to be there. If you've got too much going on, if you've got too much stress in your life that you feel like you can't stop for the Sabbath, then you absolutely need to stop for the Sabbath because you need a break. You need to rest. We need to plan ahead to be able to do that. As I said last time, you don't all of a sudden look down at your clock and think, oh man, Sabbath is in 5 minutes, or maybe the Sabbath started 10 minutes ago. I've got to stop working. You plan for it. You know in advance what you're going to do. And you enter the Sabbath with a gladness for a day of rest. You know, you might be doing homework right up to, you know, if the sun sets at 8 o'clock, maybe you're doing homework, and as you start getting closer to the Sabbath, you start getting that kind of giggly feeling of, I don't have to do any more math problems for a while. And that should elate you. That should make you happy. As we see the Sabbath coming, it's this time of, oh, boy, this is just a great thing. That's what we use the Sabbath for. So point number one again, we keep the Sabbath by abstaining from whatever our regular work is so that we can truly rest. Now, point number two, I want to spend a little time on this. I think this is an interesting one, and it's one that I don't think we often think about. Turn to Exodus chapter 31 with me. I actually would like for you to read this in your own Bibles if you've got them with you. Exodus 31, verses 12 and 13. Point number two, I'll state it here. It says, as the Sabbath was set apart, so are we set apart. I'm going to say that again, because that may be something that we haven't thought of before with the Sabbath. As God set the Sabbath apart, he has set us apart. Exodus 31, and let's start in verse 12. The Eternal spoke to Moses, saying, speak also to the children of Israel, saying, surely my Sabbaths you shall keep, for it is a sign between me and you throughout your generations, that you may know that I sanctified you. What does the word sanctified mean? Set apart. Reading it again. You will keep my Sabbaths, because as I set the Sabbath apart, I have set you apart. Keeping the Sabbath reminds us that God, as he set the Sabbath apart from all of the rest of the days of the week, he has set his people apart from the ways of this world. Verse 14, you will keep the Sabbath, therefore. What does he mean, therefore? You're to keep the Sabbath because I want you to recognize that I set you apart. As I set the Sabbath apart, I have set you apart. Therefore, you should keep the Sabbath, for it is holy. And I stop there, but that verse doesn't stop there. It is holy to you. That word holy is from the same root word as sanctify. It was set apart for you so that you can learn something. What is it that we're supposed to learn? As I set that day apart, I have set you apart. As that day is special to me, you are special to me. Keeping the Sabbath helps us recognize the fact that God chose us, selected us, and set us apart. And that's a great blessing. As he set apart the Sabbath, so has he set apart you and me. There is a direct relationship between keeping the Sabbath and our calling. Let's go on again in verse 14. You will keep the Sabbath, therefore, for it is holy for you. Everyone who profanes it shall surely be put to death. For whoever does any work on it, that person shall be cut off from among his people. Verse 15, work shall be done for 6 days. It doesn't say work maybe should be done. You should work, right? The Bible's very clear on that. You should work for 6 days. But the seventh is the Sabbath of rest. Those two words, again, it's a play on words. It is a Sabbath of Shavuot. It is a restful rest. It's intended to help you recognize what it, by using a double word there, it's intending to emphasize the fact that it's not just a rest. This is a real rest, and you need to take it seriously. Verse 16. Therefore, the children of Israel will keep the Sabbath, and they will observe the Sabbath throughout their generations as a perpetual covenant. Why? Again, because it is a sign between me and the children of Israel. For as in 6 days I made the heaven and earth, and on the seventh day I rested and was refreshed. As the Sabbath is perpetual and will last forever, so is God's promise that we will always be set apart. There will never come a time when God says, you know what, I think I'm done with you. I'm going to set you aside, or I'm just going to put you back into the common pool of things again. Remember when Clyde Kylo did the video last week, he had that basket of apples. You know, God pulls the apple out and says, I'm going to sanctify, I'm going to make this one special. But then later on he says, you know, I don't think it's special anymore, and puts it back in the group. He'll never do that. The promise of the Sabbath on into the millennium is a promise that God will never give up on you. And that's something that we can take to the bank. Remember those four words that we used from Genesis 2 last week? We can use those and apply them to us. Go to 2 Corinthians chapter 5. 2 Corinthians chapter 5 in verse 17. It's a simple verse, but I wanted to read this. You know, when God was doing the creation week and he worked in 6 days and then rested on the seventh, in effect, what he did was create the Sabbath. He rested on the Sabbath. He created the Sabbath. He had a new creation in mind, and this was the pinnacle, the end of his creation. Verse 17, it says, therefore, if anyone is in Christ, in other words, if Christ has set you apart, you are, or he is, a new creation. Just like he created the Sabbath at the end of his recreation, he is setting you apart because he is making you a new creation. As the Sabbath points to the creation of God, it also points to our calling out as well. The Sabbath reminds us that we have been pulled out of this world and set apart. Those same four words that I used last time can apply to you. We are given rest from the stress of this world. We put down our work for a day, the work of the stress of this world. And when you're in the world, it can be an extremely stressful thing. What a blessing it is to be able to just set all of that aside, wherever you work or whatever you do, or the test that maybe is coming up next week, and just say, for this 24-hour period, I'm just going to breathe. What a blessing that is. We have that. God has allowed us to rest from the work of the stress of this world. He has blessed us, that word that was used back in Genesis chapter 2, and it says he blessed the Sabbath when he gave us his calling and his Holy Spirit. He blessed us. And it says that he set us apart to be his special people. That word sanctify that was used in Genesis chapter 2, the same four words that apply to the Sabbath apply to us. The Sabbath points to us being called and chosen by God. Go forward to 2 Corinthians chapter 6. If you have the same Bible that I do over verse 11, this section is on being holy. That word holy is the same word as sanctified. How do we become sanctified? I'd like to start in verse 16. What agreement has the temple of God with idols? For you are the temple of the living God. As God has said, I will dwell in them, I will walk among them, I will be their God, and they will be my people. Therefore, remember what that word means, because God said he would walk among us, that he would be our God, that we would be his people, therefore come out from among them and be separate. I'm going to pluck you as that one apple out of that basket, and I'm going to set you aside, and you're going to be special to me. If you want to walk with me and you want me to walk with you, then you allow yourself to be separated from this world. And we know that the Sabbath gives us that rest. Just a wonderful thing to observe here, where God tells us that we are to be separate. And being separate helps us stand out so that we know that God has something in mind for us. So how does this principle help us in observing the Sabbath today? Let's go to 1 Thessalonians chapter 5. 1 Thessalonians chapter 5. And I want to read verse 23. This is, again, using the word sanctify, talking about people, talking about those of us that God is calling. How does God want to see our being set apart? Now may the God of peace himself sanctify you completely. He wants you to be completely set apart. You know how sometimes as a kid, I know I've told this story before, when you have a kid who's done something wrong and you say, I want you to go sit on the couch. And you know what they sometimes do? They'll go over to the couch, but they'll sit on the very end with just like one cheek on. They're obeying, but they're not. That's not completely obeying. God says, when I set you aside, I want to set you aside completely. That's how he wants us to be. And that you may, and may your whole spirit, not just part of it, your whole spirit, your whole soul, your whole body be preserved blameless until the coming of our Lord Jesus Christ. He's telling us that as we are sanctified, as we are set apart, we need to be fully sanctified, fully set apart. When we observe the Sabbath, we observe the Sabbath fully. We give God what he wants us to do. And again, we'll talk about those in just a moment. Why does he want us to do this? When it says, remember the Sabbath day, I think one of the interesting things that I come away with that, when you look at some of the words that are used in the Old Testament, the word moed as an example for feasts, they talk about an appointment. It's almost like you on purpose set a calendar date. You remember it by establishing a calendar date. We've got a calendar on our refrigerator. Marlis has on Monday surgery, right? Not that she's going to forget it, but it's just there so that we can all plan around it. It's something that we do. We have a weekly setting apart with God to remind us that he set us apart. As God set the Sabbath apart, he's reminding us that he has set us apart. The two go hand in hand. Each time we keep the Sabbath, we are reminded that we are a new creation, that we are a part of his work. Point three. The Sabbath observance does more than just point back to creation. It also points forward to the kingdom of God. The Sabbath points forward to the kingdom of God. We're here today because we want to be in the millennium. We want to be in the kingdom. And I'm actually going to read that in just a little while. We desire God's kingdom to come and to be a part of it. In fact, that's part of our daily prayer. It should be. You know, please bring your kingdom into this age and bring your kingdom. On this day, we are reminded that not only did we come out of the bondage of sin, just like physical Israel came out of Egypt, but God, by giving them the Sabbath, promised them that there would be another rest for them, that they were looking forward after 40 years of wandering to be in the land of Canaan, and that was a rest. They were going to have their own land. The Sabbath rest looked forward to the time when they would go into the promised land. We also have that same rest. We have that promise of a rest coming. It's one of the reasons why Mr. Armstrong a long time ago used to say that there was a 7,000-year plan. Now, I don't know if we would completely go by that now, but the idea of 6 days of creation and one day of rest was similar to 6,000 years of man's rule on this earth and then 1,000 years of peace. And I'm going to go back in Revelation in a little while and read that, how exciting that will be when that day comes. You know, this day is supposed to remind us of something. Let's go to Isaiah chapter 66. Isaiah chapter 66, this is the last few verses of the book of Isaiah, and this is a prophecy about the future. This isn't now. This isn't something that happened in the past. This is something that's going to happen in the future. Isaiah chapter 66. And let's read starting in verse 22. There's coming a time, he says, that there will be new heavens and a new earth, which I will make, and they will remain before me, says the Eternal. And so your descendants and your name remain. And it will come to pass, it hasn't come to pass yet, this is future, looking into the kingdom. It will come to pass that from one new moon to another and from one Sabbath to another, all flesh will come before me, says the eternal God, and worship. They will go forth. They will look upon the corpses of men. They'll look back at all of the evil that's happened that transgressed against me, right? All of the fire that happened, and they will abhor that way of life. There is a coming time in the future as we keep the Sabbath that we will be in a time of rest, and we can look back, as it were, on that week before us when we were slaving away and say, wow, am I glad I'm not there. I had a good friend, he's long since died. He was a deacon in the Dallas church, and I used to ask, it was a kind of a joke. I'd always ask the same question. He'd always give me the same answer, but it was just cute. I'd say, how was your week? And he would say, any week that I can walk away from was a good week. Because he suffered a lot. He had a lot of aches and pains. He had a lot of health things. The Sabbath to him was just that chance to just put it all aside and just rest and just have fun. So that Sabbath observance points to our future. Let's go to Hebrews chapter 3. I want to set the stage here for Hebrews chapter 4, but you have to read the end of Hebrews chapter 3 for it to make sense. Hebrews chapter 3, the author of the book of Hebrews, which I think was probably the Apostle Paul, but he's not named, is going to make a comparison between what ancient Israel was supposed to go through and what we will go through in the future. And then he's going to tie both of those together in the Sabbath. Hebrews 3, verse 16, talking about Israel. For who, having heard, rebelled? Again, indeed, was it not all those that came out of Egypt led by Moses? Everybody 20 years of age and older, when they came out with all these great miracles, I mean, all of the things that happened. I was saying in Laurel this morning, we had all the some rain that came through, and the frogs just came out, and it was almost too loud to be able to sleep. Can you imagine what it would have been like in the plague of the frogs, where they were in your cupboards and in your garage and in your attic, and you pulled out covers of the bed down and you got frogs in your bed? I mean, this is what these guys came through, and they all saw it. And yet, somehow, after just a few years, they just forgot it. It's very sad. Who, having heard, rebelled? Indeed, was it not all of those who came out of Egypt led by Moses? With whom was he angry for 40 years? Was it not those who sinned, whose corpses fell in the wilderness? None of them were able to get into the promised land. And to whom did he swear that they would not enter his rest? Now, he's using the word rest here, Greek word kataposis. It literally means that, to sit down and relax. Those people that were in the wilderness did not get that rest. They didn't get into the promised land because they sinned. But to those who did not obey, so we see that they couldn't enter that rest because of their unbelief. So he's talking about Israel that was not able to get into Canaan. Now he's going to shift gears, and he's going to talk about us today, looking to our future rest. Chapter 4. Therefore, since a promise remains for entering his rest, this is something yet to the future. This isn't us going back to Israel, right? This is something different. Since a promise remains of entering his rest, again the word kataposis, let us fear lest any of you seem to have come short of it. You know, one of the reasons, again, and you're going to see this in a while, why we keep the Sabbath, is to remind us that there is a future rest coming. And we look forward to that rest. We look forward to the millennium. Verse 2, for indeed the gospel was preached to us as it was to them. Ancient Israel heard it. We've heard it today. But the word which they heard didn't profit them because it wasn't mixed with faith. They didn't believe it. They saw all these great miracles and they still goofed up. It's amazing. But verse 3, for we who have believed will enter that rest. As he said, so I swore in my wrath, they will not enter my rest, although the works were finished from before the foundation of the world. Verse 4, now he's talked about ancient Israel and the rest that they should have entered. He's talking about the future and the rest that we will enter, the millennium. And then he ties the two together with the Sabbath. Verse 4, for he spoke in a certain place of the seventh day in this way, and God rested, again, kataposis, from the seventh day from all his works. And again, in another place, they will not enter my rest. Verse 6, since therefore it remains that some must enter it, that there is a rest coming, and those to whom it was first preached did not enter because of their disobedience. Again, verse 7, God designated a certain day, saying in David, Today, after such a long time as it is, today, if you will hear his voice, don't harden your hearts. He's going to start drawing a parallel between what ancient Israel went through and what we have to look forward to in the kingdom. Verse 8, for if Joshua had given them rest, again, catapausis, then he would not have afterwards spoken of another day. And verse 9 is the linchpin of this. It says, there remains, therefore, a rest for the people of God. That word rest in verse 9 is not catapausis. That word rest in verse 9 is sabbatismos, drew directly from the Hebrew to make the point. Another way of translating all the way through here, rest is correct. Rest is absolutely correct. But you could translate verse 9 saying, because they didn't enter their rest, catapausis, because we have a rest, because they blew it, and because we shouldn't, there remains, therefore, a sabbatismos, a keeping of the Sabbath for the people of God. The reason why we keep the Sabbath, one of them, is to look forward to the millennium. And every Sabbath that we keep, every week that we keep the Sabbath, it reminds us that we are looking forward to that rest, that sabbatismos, that millennial reign of Jesus Christ. Why? Because it looks forward to the millennium. So with that principle in mind, how does that help us understand how to keep the Sabbath? In the millennium, we will have complete rest from sin and Satan. I want to turn to Revelation chapter 20 and read this. Revelation chapter 20, and let's start in verse 1. We usually read this on the Day of Atonement and start of the Feast of Tabernacles. But I want to read it here because this millennial reign that's coming is pictured by our observance of the Sabbath. I just thought, well, if we read what it's going to be like in the millennium, maybe we can apply some of that backwards to the Sabbath. Chapter 20, verse 1, I saw an angel come down from heaven, having a key to the bottomless pit and a great chain in his hand. I've said this before, and I say it again. I want a front row seat to this. I want to watch him put in chains. And he laid hold, verse 2, of the dragon, the old serpent, or the serpent of old, called the devil and Satan, and he bound him for 1,000 years. So what's going to happen during that 1,000 years? Cast him into the bottomless pit and shut him up and set a seal on him. Why? So that he couldn't deceive the nations during that 1,000 years. There's going to be rest on the earth for 1,000 years from Satan. We will be cheering that when it happens. So apply that back to the Sabbath. As the Sabbath starts, why would we not be cheering the start of the Sabbath instead of saying, oh man, I've got so much work to do, right? When it comes this time, when the angel comes down out of heaven with a chain in his hand, we're not going to be saying, no, can you wait just a minute? I've got to finish mowing the lawn. I mean, it's just not how we're going to think then. And we shouldn't be doing that now. The start of the Sabbath should be something so exciting for us, just like we will be excited to see this happen. The great deceiver of the world will be put away. That he will deceive the nation no more until the 1,000 years were finished. Go down to verse 4. Look at what the rest of this says for us. I saw thrones, and they that sat on them, and judgment was committed to them. And I saw the souls of those who were beheaded for the witness to Jesus and for the word of God, and for those who had not worshipped the beast or his image and had not received his mark on their foreheads or on their hands. And they lived and they reigned with Christ for 1,000 years. What an exciting time that will be to have complete rest from all sin, from all deceitfulness, from all of Satan. If the millennium pictures that, and the Sabbath pictures the coming millennium, should we not emulate the millennium to the best of our ability on the Sabbath? When we start the Sabbath should be an exciting time. I don't have to do any homework. I don't have to go into Entergy or wherever you happen to work. I can stop for that period of time. It's like saying, I'm going to have a break from Satan and his world. I have to take a break, just like there will be a break then. And that takes planning. We have to set aside the distractions that can keep us from focusing on that goal. When Satan is chained, we will all be seeing it and cheering. The start of the millennium should be a time of great joy. The middle of the Sabbath should be a time of great joy. The end of the Sabbath, just like the end of the millennium, should be a time of great joy. Not one where we're desperately, as and I've said this last week, and it's true. When I was a kid, we went to church for 2 hours, we came home, and we went through the notes again for another 2 or 2.5 hours, and then until the Sabbath was done, I sat on the couch. I wasn't allowed to go anywhere. I was looking forward to the Sabbath ending. That's not the picture of the Sabbath. That should never have been ingrained in my mind. I had to unlearn that as I got older, that that's not what the Sabbath was all about. The Sabbath is not about those rules and regulations that make it miserable. The Sabbath is about rest. It's about breathing. It's about relaxing. It's about rejuvenating, recharging your batteries. What a blessing. The Sabbath and the millennium will and should be a time of great joy. Point number four, the Sabbath is a delight. Sometimes that may seem, especially to children, like an oxymoron. Let's go to Isaiah 58. Isaiah 58, verses 13 and 14. This is Isaiah talking about the Sabbath. He was chiding ancient Israel, and I think it applies equally for us today. Here's what Isaiah says in chapter 58 and verse 13. If you turn away your foot from the Sabbath, from doing your pleasure on my Sabbath day, and call the Sabbath a delight, the holy day of the eternal, honorable, and honor him, not doing your own ways or finding your own pleasures or speaking your own words, then you will delight yourself in the eternal, and I will cause you to ride on the high hills of the earth, and I will feed you with the heritage of Jacob your father. The mouth of the eternal has spoken this. Sometimes, and I know this was true of me when I was a kid, when I read this, here's what I read. You can't do your own pleasure, but you have to call the Sabbath a delight. That sounded to me like you can't have any fun, but you have to call it fun. And unfortunately, for many, many years, probably until I went to Ambassador College, that the Sabbath was like that to me. That's not what the Sabbath is about. I can't have any fun, but I have to call it fun. Reading from the Common English Bible, it says, if you stop trampling the Sabbath, and we'll get into what that means, stop doing whatever you want on my holy day and consider the Sabbath a delight, sacred to the eternal, honored and honoring it instead of doing whatsoever things you seek, including doing your own business. What does that mean, and how can we apply that to this century? I think that the Pharisees in the days of Christ took that to a ridiculous length with all of the crazy rules that they had. You know, I talked about them last week. And I don't know if I said this last week, but you know the reason why they had in their rule book that you could only walk 1,000 cubits. Somebody back in the day made the measurement, and almost everybody that was in Jerusalem lived within 1,000 cubits of the temple, and you had to go to the temple on the Sabbath. So that obviously wasn't wrong. But any further than that was what was called a Sabbath day's journey. You could go from your house to the temple to worship. All these rules and regulations that came out. To me, that is as ridiculous as saying, well, I want a glass of water, but I'm not allowed to do what I want. Therefore, on the Sabbath, I can't have a glass of water. But I have to say that I'm enjoying myself, even though I want a glass of water. It's ridiculous. But that's what the Sabbath became. You know, I talked about that crazy Sabbath elevator that got me so irritated in Israel, in Jerusalem. That is not how the Sabbath is supposed to be kept. We're not supposed to not do something that sounds fun, but then turn around and say, but I'm having fun. So how's that work? How can we apply that to this century? First of all, it says in here, if you turn away your foot from the Sabbath. I just want to talk about that for a moment. Again, for the sake of time, I won't turn there, but Proverbs 4, verse 26 tells man to ponder the path of your feet. Your feet take you places. Your feet can take you into trouble. Your feet can take you away from trouble. Ponder the paths of your feet. So in Isaiah 53 and verse 13, it says, if you turn your foot away from the Sabbath, meaning if you stop breaking the Sabbath by walking into trouble and from doing your own pleasure, whatever you think you might want to do. So let's talk a little bit about what that means. This is not an admonition, by the way, if you turn your foot away from the Sabbath. That does not mean you can't walk on the Sabbath. There were some, I think, including many in the church a long time ago, that kind of took that to mean you shouldn't walk anywhere. You should just sit in the house, sit on the couch with your arms folded. Christ wasn't doing that. Remember, I read that last time. He was out walking in the fields with his disciples, and they were talking. And we'll talk about that, too, in a moment. So your feet take you places. Rather, what this is saying is, don't walk toward your own pleasure if walking toward your own pleasure walks away from the reason to keep the Sabbath. As we are set apart, the Sabbath is also set apart. We both belong to God. We belong to God. The Sabbath belongs to God. So let's get an idea of what he wants us doing on that day. Why would he have to do that? Again, I think it's interesting that he is telling us to rest. I think he realized as human beings that we just probably would think we really didn't need to rest. I can work 7 days a week and be just fine and have a heart attack at 40 and all of the other things. But God is saying, no, that's not what I want from you. I want your feet to take you on that day toward me. So let me ask a couple of rhetorical questions here. Can you take a walk in nature on the Sabbath and break the Sabbath? Absolutely can. You can take a walk in nature, and as you're walking, you can think, oh, I need to do this next week, and oh, I forgot to mow the lawn, and boy, as soon as sun's down, if it's not too dark, I'm going to, and all of a sudden, you're distracted by life again. That's not resting. That's not rejuvenation. That is walking in nature and breaking the Sabbath. Now, here's the second question. Can you take a walk in nature on the Sabbath and keep the Sabbath? Absolutely. When we were driving to up to Laurel today, I always find this fascinating, and I don't know why it's fascinating to me, but it is. There's a particular tree on the way up that's long since dead, stripped of all leaves, and it's just basically a tall telephone pole with some dead limbs sticking out. But almost always when we go by there, there is an eagle sitting on the very top of that tree. That's just so beautiful to me. I've always found that fascinating. I was telling Marlis, I was walking yesterday, and I, for some reason when I walk, I look down. I don't know why I do that. I actually have run into cars before because I've got my visor on and I'm looking down. But all of a sudden I saw this bird's shadow pass in front of me. And I looked up and there was 4-foot wingspan, I'm assuming eagle. It was about 25 feet above my head. And I thought, well, how cool is that? So I stopped and watched it for a while and then I looked back down and I continued walking. And that crazy bird, that shadow, crossed in front of me for the next 10 minutes. I kept looking up, and that was right over my head as I was walking for 10 minutes. Then I all of a sudden thought, well, maybe this isn't an eagle. Maybe it's a vulture, and he's waiting for me to die. Maybe I smelled like I was on my deathbed or something. I don't know what. But if you take a walk in nature and you walk toward God, you remember his creation. You're reminded of the fact that you're resting. I'm not at my desk. I'm out walking in nature. How cool is that? I'm looking forward to the millennium. I'm looking forward to the time when everything is going to be peaceful, just like it is right now as I'm walking around. Can you imagine what it's going to be like to help build the millennium? We talk about that every Feast of Tabernacles time. I just am so excited about helping to finish off this work. What a great blessing that's going to be. It isn't the walk. It's the intent of the walk. Walking's not the problem. It's the intent of the walk. It's not about do's and don'ts. It's about the attitude. It's about the intent. A nice walk focused on his goal can be an excellent stress reliever. I want to look at three things that's also mentioned at the end of verse, is it 13? Yeah. It almost sounds like Isaiah's getting into a list of do's and don'ts here. But I hope we don't see it this way. Notice what it says here at the end of verse 13. You will not do your own ways, nor find your own pleasures, nor speak your own words. That sounds like don't, don't. But let's see what it is that he's talking about here. What is to do our ways versus his ways? If we do our ways and not his ways, we continue on with the normal routine that we focus on the things that we're concerned about. If we're continuing to do our ways, we're thinking about work. We're thinking about the test coming up on Monday, that math test. We're thinking about the lawn that didn't get mowed because I just had too much to do. Those are our ways. God says, I want you to put all of that aside and I want you to rest. Why is that so hard for us? But it is. Don't do your ways. Isaiah 58:8 or 55:8, I won't turn there, but he says, my ways are not your ways. In other words, learn my ways. One day a week, put your ways aside and do mine. Ask yourself on the Sabbath, what are his ways? It says, don't do your pleasure. For me, That means hobbies, sports, television, movies. Those are our pleasures, and I stay away from those. I love watching science fiction. Science fiction, if I watched it on the Sabbath, would get me away from thinking about the millennium. Unless it was the Millennium Falcon, but that's another story. I don't watch those things on the Sabbath. That's me. What was God's pleasure for me? I think God wants us to focus on his plan, on our rest, and it should be a delight. It should be enjoyable. Our words, our mouths speak what's in our hearts. On this day, we should be as if in conversation with Christ himself. What things would he talk about when he was with his disciples walking in the cornfields on the Sabbath day? What were they talking about? Probably wasn't who was going to win the PGA tournament tomorrow. It was about the plan of God. And they focused on that. There actually is an example of that in the Bible. I want to turn to Acts chapter 16 and show you something that the Apostle Paul did on the Sabbath day that was outside of church. Probably most of you wouldn't even realize that this was in there and that was what this was. Acts chapter 16, verse 13. Notice what Paul did. On the Sabbath day, we went out of the city to the riverside. He's going to take a walk. He's taking a walk in nature. And we went to where prayer was customarily made, and we sat down and we spoke to the women whom we met there. He didn't know who they were going into it. They're out on the Sabbath day. They're taking a lovely walk. Hey, I heard that down by the riverside, there's ladies that go there every Sabbath and pray. Let's go talk to them. And off they went. And he sat down there and he talked with them. Verse 14 talks about one of them was Lydia, a seller in purple. And she became a part of the New Testament church. As Paul was talking to her and they were talking about the Sabbath, about the holy days probably, about the plan of God, about who Jesus Christ was. And she became convinced and later on, we know from just a few verses later, was eventually baptized. Just because they were taking a walk, said, let's go down by the river. I hear there's people down there. Let's just go talk to them. And that's what they did. But it wasn't their ways. It wasn't their pleasure. It wasn't their words. They were using the Sabbath to rest and to relax and to talk about the plan of God. Number five, and this is the last one. And I've mentioned this before, but I just wanted to make mention of it again because I think it's something that we need to stay focused on. The Sabbath is a convocation. And in fact, the Sabbath is a holy convocation. I should have that in my notes, and I don't. The Sabbath is a holy convocation. Go back to Leviticus chapter 23. Leviticus 23, and in verse 3. Before God told Moses about the Passover and unleavened bread and Pentecost and all of that. In verse 3, he talked about the Sabbath day. And he says in here, 6 days shall work be done, but the seventh day is a Sabbath. Now, we could have stopped right there, but it doesn't. He's using a double year. He's saying it is a Sabbath of rest, a Shabbat of Shavath. It is a restful rest. But he doesn't stop there. It's not just all about rest. He says, and it is also a holy convocation. Convocation is a word that we don't use much anymore, but the word convocation by definition means that you are called together by someone's authority. If you receive a summons to appear in court, that court hearing is a convocation. You were summoned to attend, right? No offense to Linda, who just had a tough week with that, but it's a summons, and you're supposed to attend. A convocation is a summons to appear. And it's not just a summons. It is a holy convocation. It is set apart. God has a meeting that he has commanded us to be at in which he sets us apart from the rest of the world. God places his name here, and we assemble as a group of holy people in a holy convocation. You could even say that this room, during the time of this meeting, has become a holy room. It has been set apart. This room has been set apart for this convention. Have you ever gone to the Feast of Tabernacles and then stayed a day or two after and helped tear down? It doesn't feel like the feast. During the time that we're there, it is special. It is holy. But after everyone leaves, it's just a big room with a lot of chairs and a lot of stuff to clean up off the floor. I was at Ambassador College, and after my first year, Mr. Armstrong got a little upset with the way the administration was running, and he actually closed the college down for 6 months. And I stayed a couple of weeks afterwards because I couldn't get a ride out before I went home. And during the time that the college was closed and I was on campus, there was no life in it. It was dead. It's as if he wasn't there for that period of time. He set it aside and he made it holy. Do we understand when we come to God on the Sabbath day that we are coming to a holy convocation that he commanded? We are being summoned to come here. To consider the Sabbath service just another meeting would be to make it ordinary. And it is not ordinary. The meaning of holy means that it was set apart. Our demeanor, our conduct, our conversation needs to be there. What's on our mind today? Is it ordinary or is it holy? Is it set apart for God's use? Last week, I started the sermon with a video. And I want to show another video here in just a minute. This one's a little different. I actually wrestled with whether to show it or not because it isn't one that we did. This is a video that Dennis Prager did. So a lot of you know who Dennis Prager is. He's Jewish. He's a conservative. And he did a video series on the Ten Commandments. One of those was on the Sabbath. Now, he's got 5 points. They're different than my five. They're a little less spiritual and a little more materialistic. But nevertheless, I thought that this was good. I want to play this video here, and then I'll come back and we'll conclude the sermon.
Many people who revere the Ten Commandments don't think that the fourth is particularly important, let alone binding. Once you understand it, however, you will recognize how life-changing, even world-changing, the Sabbath commandment is, and you will begin to appreciate how relevant it is to your own life. The fourth commandment reads, "Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, neither you, nor your son or daughter, nor your male or female servant, nor your animals, nor any foreigner residing in your towns." Why is this so important? First, perhaps more than any other commandment, it elevated the human being. How so? For nearly all of human history, life consisted overwhelmingly of work. In effect, humans were beasts of burden. This commandment, and only this commandment, changed all that by insisting that people cease working 1 day out of 7. Second, more than any other commandment, the Sabbath day reminds people that they are meant to be free. As the second version of the commandment, the one summarized by Moses in the book of Deuteronomy, states, "Remember that you were slaves in Egypt." In other words, remember that slaves cannot have a Sabbath. In light of this, I might add that in the biblical view, unless necessary for survival, people who choose to work 7 days a week are essentially slaves. Slaves to work or perhaps to money, but slaves nonetheless. The millionaire who works 7 days a week is simply a rich slave. Third, while the Bible could not universally abolish slavery, the Sabbath commandment greatly humanized that terrible institution and even helped make slavery impossible. By definition, a slave owner was under no obligation to allow a slave to ever rest, let alone to rest 1 day every week. Yet that is exactly what the fourth commandment commanded. Even a slave has fundamental human rights. Therefore, a slave, too, is a human being. Fourth, the Sabbath almost single-handedly creates and strengthens family ties and friendships. When a person takes off from work 1 day every week, that day almost inevitably becomes a day spent with other people, namely family and or friends. It has similar positive effects on marriages. Ask anyone married to a workaholic how good it would be for their marriage if the workaholic would not work for one day each week. And you can appreciate the power of the Sabbath day. Fifth, the Sabbath commandment granted animals dignity. Even one's animals had to rest one day a week. It is, to the best of our knowledge, the first national law in history on behalf of animals. And its benefits to animals surely went beyond a mandatory day of rest for them. People who felt divinely obligated to give their animals a day of rest were much less likely to treat their animals cruelly any day of the week. Now, all five of these life-changing and society-changing benefits of the Sabbath are available to anyone. You don't have to be a Jew, a Christian, or even a believer in God to derive all these benefits. But the reality is that those who believe the Ten Commandments were given by God are the ones who have kept the Sabbath alive. The God factor plays another role in the Sabbath. Just as faith in God brings people to the Sabbath, observing the Sabbath brings people to faith in God. That is why the first version of the Ten Commandments, the version in the book of Exodus, ends with these words. For in 6 days God made the heavens and the earth, the sea, and all that is in them, but he rested on the seventh day. Therefore God blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. However you interpret 6 days, and many Jewish and Christian believers do not translate days as 24-hour periods, the point is this. Every time you keep the Sabbath, you are affirming that there is a creator, that the world didn't just happen, that life isn't some meaningless coincidence, but that it is infinitely meaningful, and therefore each of us has a unique significance and purpose. Not bad for one day a week. No wonder that the Sabbath is one of the Ten Commandments. No wonder that those who have it in their lives are often happier, with richer family lives, more serenity, a community of friends, and yes, are even healthier. You might want to give it a try. I'm Dennis Prager.
Interesting perspective, isn't it, on the Sabbath? You know, he had 5 points. I gave 5 points. I think if we look at this, we can conclude that God has indeed called us out of this world to be separate. Are we enjoying that fact, or are we enduring it? Is the Sabbath a delight, or is the Sabbath something that we can't wait to get past? This day reminds us that God is the master of the universe. As he said, he's the one who created us. He created the universe. He created the Sabbath. He's the reason for the existence of all of us. This day reminds us that just as he brought Israel out of bondage, so too has he brought us out of the bondage of slavery. We are also reminded of his work in our lives, that eventually we will enter that day of rest, the millennium, when Satan is finally put away. We're also reminded that today is the day that he, and only he, set apart for that special purpose. God made this day holy. As a result, we need to be careful that we ensure that we don't make what God made holy to be common or ordinary. So, brethren, as we bring this to a conclusion, I just want to remind you again of what God said in Exodus chapter 20 and verse 8. Remember to keep the Sabbath holy.